Welcome back to the Off the Crossbar podcast here on IsleIndoor.com, brought to you by Inside Lacrosse. And we continue our GM talks as we go around the National Lacrosse League. We've talked to Doug Locker, we've talked to Mike Ford, and now we're going to talk to Derek Keenan, the man who wears two hats for the Edmonton Rush. He joins us on the podcast. Derek, how are you?
I'm doing well, Teddy. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. You guys had the week off. Are you enjoying the break?
Yeah, it's been good. We had a pretty heavy schedule early, and especially the last month. But a week off, but it never really leaves you. So we're trying to prepare for Rochester as we move forward here. But it was nice to get a break, I think, for the guys too. Although we were playing pretty well at the start of the break, so. Sometimes you wonder whether it's a good thing or not, but Rochester had a break of the week off too, so level playing field, I think, this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, does it come at a bit of a bad timing for you, being on such a hot streak and having to take this rest off?
Well, I think in the way we were playing, but at the same time, I think we were getting pretty banged up too. Nothing serious, but enough that a weekend off is going to help us heal some of those bumps and bruises. So I think it was probably a good thing for us.
And are you worried that Mark Matthews is in Paris?
He's back.
Okay, good.
I was a little concerned. But he took his sneakers with him.
That's good. So he was running up the stairs of the Eiffel Tower then.
Exactly. Okay. He's going to stay right on top of
that. We'll talk about Mark in a little bit, but quickly, you got six games left, four of them against Eastern Conference Division teams. Is that tough to prepare when you're sort of focused on doing so well in the West?
I think probably back in a 13 or 14 team league it was. Mm-hmm. Because it was largely a kind of an East-West league where you didn't play the East a lot and you didn't see the East a lot because your West division opponents didn't play them a lot. But I think now with the number of games that we play against the East and our opponents play against the East, that you see a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And, we see, obviously, see Toronto a lot because they play Calgary twice and we play them twice. And so you prepare for Rochester, so you've already watched them play Toronto and, so we've got a stretch here of Rochester, Buffalo, Toronto, where we can really focus on them, which is kind of nice. I mean, we over the next three weekends here or two weekends, we can really focus in on those opponents playing each other and playing similar defensive styles, and so it makes it not too difficult, I don't think.
The Edmonton Oilers just finished a nine-game road trip, or still on a nine-game road trip because of the Brier. You guys are now going on basically a three-game road trip. How do you prepare for that?
Well, I think the one thing is the guys have to stay on top of their fitness and don't expect a lot in terms of practice. Like, we are going to practice in Rochester on Friday, but facilities aren't the best, so. So you got to do a lot of work on your own, which is really the case with our league anyway. You have to stay on top of your fitness on your own, but, pay attention to detail and everything we send the guys in terms of film and certain things you want to key on a team like Rochester this weekend. But at the same time, we've played really well on the road. So, we seem to, for whatever reason, play better on the road, maybe because we have the whole group together. We spend a lot of time together and that type of thing. But we have played, we've been a good road team since I've been in Edmonton for some reason. Yeah. And we just got to figure out the other part of it. But, it's actually not a bad thing for us this stretch. We're 4-1 on the road but we have tough games ahead of us here. They're not easy opponents, that's for sure.
You got your career sort of started after a playing career in Buffalo. You played a few games with Toronto. Then you got brought onto the bench and you learned your trade under the late, great Les Bartley. What did he mean to your development as not only a coach, but as a general manager?
Nobody more important, that's for sure, than Les. I think the biggest thing was how he treated people and his communication skills with players and how he treated everybody equally and with respect and just a great communicator, very good technical guy too in terms of, he was a bit of an innovator. I know when he coached me back in Buffalo in the early 90s, he was the first guy that really started watching film, man, and we had a really, really talented team. And I remember him saying to me, to Kevin Alexander and I one time, you know, I can't really teach you guys how to play, but I can certainly, you know, figure out what other teams are doing and what we can do against them. And he was a bit of an innovator that way. I think he took the game to another level to where it is now in terms of how teams prepare. So definitely nobody more important than Les in my development as a coach and GM.
How special were those times, you know, the four championships you guys won over the, you know, six seasons from 99, 2000, 2002, and then the last one in 2003 before Les eventually lost his battle with colon cancer. How special were those championships?
Well, they were a lot of fun. I mean, you think about those times then, and, you know, filling Maple Leaf Gardens the first 2 years and, you know, winning a couple of really close games there, especially in the second one with Caleb scoring late in the game. Just electrifying in that old building. And then, of course, moved to Air Canada Center where we were getting 18, 19,000. And, you know, really a special time because I think that we kind of, that team set the tone, I think, for future success of franchises and how to build them. And a lot of it was to do, you know, Les and Johnny's job that they did there, Johnny early on and then Les later on. But a lot of fun, a lot of really good group of guys, and you know, a lot of them still playing, but others have moved on to, you know, coaches and other positions in the league and that. So it was a real, real good time and you know, a lot of fun and just, you know, an exciting time in terms of the development of the game because we just it had such a following in terms of the fan base and the kids that were in the building. And I think it really helped to grow minor lacrosse in Ontario and probably throughout Canada as well.
When Les stepped down in 2003, yourself and Eddie Como got the promotion. Eddie went behind the bench. You took the GM roles. You guys didn't last very long, though. Would you have changed anything?
No, not at all. No, we just kept doing what we'd done for 4 or 5 years or 6 years. You know, we didn't do anything differently. You know, we just struggled a little bit for whatever reason. And, you know, at the time, I think we were 2-4 when they pulled the plug, and we obviously thought it was a little too soon. But, hey, I mean, at the same time, it gave both Eddie and I opportunity and opened up doors. And, you know, Les was still around at the time, and I remember him saying, you know what, it just, you know, one door closes and other doors open. And that's the way we had to look at it, and both of us have gone on to other opportunities and had success. And, you know, so, you know, probably not a bad, you know, obviously at the time it was devastating, but down the road you look back and you go, you know what, it was, you know, probably a good thing for both of us. It gave us other opportunities.
And that first door that opened was moving to Anaheim, the furthest team west in National Lacrosse League and based out of the United States in Anaheim. And I was a part of the very first team where we went 1-15 and it was absolutely deplorable and we were terrible and we couldn't do anything right. And then you come in and you make them a 5-11 team. You kind of turn them around a bit, but they fold the next year. Was there any hope for Anaheim to have ever worked in the National Lacrosse League?
Boy, it was a tough market. You know, it was pretty sparse, which was too bad because I think we were really headed in the right direction there. We had a pretty good group of guys.
Yeah.
When you really look back at it, you know, we had both Powells and, you know, we had a lot of other good pieces and a lot of guys that went on to, you know, have pretty solid careers in the league. So we had a real good core group, you know, Bruce Murray and Matt Duane and, Lorie Glaves was there. And, you know, we were a pretty good group. And, you know, Peter Morgan, Rich Morgan and that. So, you know, it was too bad, but it was a tough. I mean, I think you're aware you go into that building, it's probably under 1,000 people.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And that was a season two with no hockey.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know. Well, it was nice in that way, though. We practiced in the pond and night before the game. And I'll tell you, it was nice going to Southern California that time of the year.
Yeah,
So it was a real, and for me, it was probably a good place to start out with that role, you know, in kind of an obscure market and, you know, not a lot of spotlight on us and gave me an opportunity to learn a ton about about doing that job, and then you know, moving on from there.
Yeah, and you go up the highway up to Portland. You build a great relationship with the owner of the Anaheim team at the time, Angela Batinovich, and she moves up to Portland and starts an expansion team there. Was she a good owner? I didn't know her that much. Was her heart in the right place?
I think so. I just think that there was mistakes made. I believe, Teddy, that there still should be a team there. I think it was a really good market.
Yeah.
I think the location was awesome in terms of player personnel. And, you know, our last 2 years there, we really didn't have very many fly-in guys from Ontario. So we had kind of made a conscious effort to do that and focus in on Western-based guys and cut down on costs. And, you know, we had our few core guys that we still brought in, like Merrill and that. But it was, you know, it was largely a Western-based team. So we had that going for us. We kind of tapped into that player personnel. You know, we had guys that had moved to the market, like Ryan Powell moved to the market, and Richie Morgan was living in the market, and Peter Morgan was living in the market. Yeah. So there's a lot of good things happening. But, you know, I look back at, we had an unbelievable first season at 11-5 and won the regular season division. And, you know, they kind of just shut the office down for about 6 months instead of, you know, really, you know, tapping into that success that we had.
Yeah.
And I think there wasn't enough follow-up that after that first season. Then year two, we had a tough year on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, we kind of built the first year around, you know, success out the door. And then we didn't have a lot left in the closet the second year. And then we kind of had to rebuild and, you know, went to a championship game. And then in 09, we had a really solid year, and then it was done. So, tough though. Like I thought it was a really good market, and probably some mistakes were made, and unfortunately, you know, we move on.
And you look at that fan base. You had a great fan base. You may not have been selling out the Rose Garden, but you had very loyal, passionate fans who got into it. You know, you had I can't remember, what was the woodcutter guy's name? I can't even remember his name. The lumberjack guy that was sort of one of your main fans that kind of, you know, people were able to build around, and they got around behind that lumberjack motto and the idea of it all. And even look at the Portland Timbers, the MLS soccer team, they've exploded. It just like you guys did right off the start. And it is really too bad that you guys weren't able to succeed there. Do you think there's a chance the NLL is even looking or thinking about going back there?
I hope so, because if you have the right people there, and I still believe it's a really good market.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they're ever going to get NHL hockey there. There just doesn't seem to be enough interest from an ownership perspective. They love their basketball. They got a major junior hockey team. They play in a different building. But I think it's if you have the right group there, it could be a phenomenal market. And but you know, it's like any market, but you got to stick with it, and you got to let it grow, and or try to make it grow and try to build it. And you know, we had some pretty good teams there and some success as well, and that makes it even harder. But and I thought there was a pretty bright future there as well with the group we had, because we were getting younger and better, I think, before we moved on. So but it's too bad. But I think it would go there. I really do. I think it'd be a real good market. And if you can keep those other Western teams, like, you know, Washington there, and then maybe get a Vancouver in the mix, then you could have a real good kind of I-5, you know, rivalry there. It'd be phenomenal.
Yeah, that's the exact points that Doug Locker made when we first talked to him a couple weeks ago. Before we leave Portland, how important it was for you and as a franchise and as a team to get Brody Merrill in that expansion draft and win that coin toss with the team you're now the GM of?
Well, yeah, that was, you know, in Portland, you mean?
Yeah,
was huge, obviously. I mean, there was expansion, dispersal, and the entry draft that year.
Yeah, crazy.
We got the first pick in the dispersal, and we got the first pick in the entry draft. So getting Brody to build around was phenomenal. I mean, that was huge for us, and it enabled us to build, you know, out of the gate right away. And I got it managed through some transactions to get a good number of the guys from Portland from Anaheim that I liked, and, you know, we had success right away. But Brody was a game changer from day one. You know, he was the guy that could will his team to wins, and he still does it to this day. And you know, he he was the guy without question in that franchise that made it what it was.
You're now the general manager and head coach of the Edmonton Rush. What's the toughest part of wearing two hats?
Well, I think, you know, the hardest part is, I think sometimes you gotta be hard in terms of, you know, player personnel decisions and, mm-hmm. and financial decisions and that, and then you gotta turn around and coach the guy the next day. So that would be the hardest part, but I don't really struggle that much with it. I actually really like the dual role. I like to have, you know, control of the players and the type of guy that I want to bring in. And, you know, I work pretty closely with Mr. Urban with that, but, you know, I like it. I don't really struggle with it a lot. I've done it for a long time. I think 9 years now, and I enjoy it.
How is your relationship with Bruce? Because he's been around since day one with this team, and I played under him for 2 years, and I don't know if I've met too many owners that are as passionate about the game of lacrosse and his team that he is. How's your relationship with him been over the past few years?
Good. He's very committed.
Yeah.
Obviously, to making this thing work in Edmonton. You know, he's done a lot of things to try and make it work and continues. And now I think we're on the right path in terms of what we have on the floor.
Yeah.
And it's taken a while, you know, since I've been there 4 years, we've gone two or three different kind of avenues to have success. And now I think we've really found the right avenue and we have a pretty good young group there.
What do you look for when you're bringing in a player? Do you look for a guy that can be molded, a guy that already has a winning pedigree, or someone that fits your system?
Well, if you can find all three of those.
true. That wasn't an option, but I'll take it.
We kind of, if you look from a defensive perspective, you know, we changed our system based on the players we had. I think we have a super athletic, strong, fast, skilled group. So we can play and do play and are successful with a really up-tempo style of defense. So, you know, whereas in the past I've had teams where I thought we were a little more successful playing more contained and a little more conservative style defense. So I think we molded that toward the players that we have. Now from there, though, we look for guys now that can come in and play that system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking for fast, athletic guys with some skill between the lines as well. So, and then from an offensive perspective, you know, really, you just try and get the best guys, the guys that we feel are the best guys. And, you know, I think now really in our league, offenses are almost cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody, it's like the NFL, it's copycat. Everybody does a lot of the same things. A lot of really good things, but a lot of the same things. And then it comes down to how you execute it. So it's about having those guys that, you know, you want to have guys that want to get to the dirty areas, that's for sure. You got to have perimeter presence. You know, you got to have speed and you got to have size. So, you know, if you can have a little bit of all of those things, which I think we do in Edmonton, I think we got a little bit of it all. Do we have the best group? No, probably not. But I think we have a very good group. And for the most part, a young group.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, very positive as well.
Have you seen a better defender in your years of lacrosse than Kyle Rubish?
I don't think so.
Oh, God.
I honestly don't think so. And he's 24 years old.
Yeah.
So,
he's a monster.
He's got some instincts that guys just don't have typically. And, he's very good.
Through that whole debacle that was the Ethan Iannucci, Paul Rabel, you know, gong show that happened with, you know, Iannucci gets traded, he holds out, Rabel gets traded, he holds out. And then all of a sudden, lo and behold, through it all, you end up with a number one overall pick and Washington has their worst season. And you get handed your good friend and a guy you coached in junior, Mark Matthews. Could it have worked out any better?
Yeah, well, the way it worked out, when you look at it now, you go, geez, that was brilliant. But I'll tell you, it wasn't very brilliant because it all goes back to the hardest thing I've ever had to do, and that was the Merrill trade.
Right,
and that's where it all goes back to.
Yeah.
That's what gave us the assets to kind of end up where we were at. But honestly, we were sitting there at one point last year with Brody Merrill in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Chris Corbeil injured with a broken foot.
Yeah.
We were sitting in Edmonton with a backup goalie for Brody Merrill. And I'm sitting there going, this ain't going so well.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going, okay. So then, you know, Corbeil gets back healthy and we start playing better. And Aaron Bold stood on his head all year. And then, you know, we finally unload Rabel and we think, okay, we got an opportunity here. And then he doesn't want to play. Rabel doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Sorry, unload Iannucci.
Iannucci.
We get Rabel and he doesn't want to play. And we're going, okay, we got to really, how are we going to do this? Well, we had tremendous defense and good goaltending. And then our offense started to get going. And then at the back of your mind, you're going, you know what, if we can finish ahead of Washington, you know, we're going to probably get the first pick in the draft and then we're going to be in business here. So that's what happened. And it's a strange game at times. And then at the end of the day, we almost won a championship.
Yeah.
So, you know, and believe me, it wasn't any genius on anybody's part. It was just kind of the way it happened.
You've been around Mark Matthews for a few years. Has he always been this good and this dominant?
Yep. I think I've seen him play since Pee Wee, and he's always kind of big and at that time a little bit awkward, but, you know, then he moves up into, he was always the best player on his minor team at Whitby, that's for sure. And then, you know, he played a junior B, year junior B, and he was really, and what impressed me about him in junior B was how well he played without the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was very dominant that year, and then he was up to junior A and had a really good rookie year in junior A, and then he kind of fell off a little bit, and then he got an opportunity to go out west and play, which I think was really positive for him.
Yeah.
And then we got him, and we let him go because we felt we weren't really ready to win yet that year. And mm-hmm. then he got an opportunity out there, and we got him back, and we had our own shot at it in 2011. So, but yeah, he's been a dominant player since he was a kid. That's for sure.
Do you enjoy coaching the juniors as well?
Yeah, I do. I really like it. I really like the development part of it, Teddy. I think that's what it's all about. Our philosophy in Whitby is development first and winning second. And we're trying and every summer to develop more players to the higher levels. And we got a lot of good kids who want to strive to that level. And, you know, we're really not interested in kids that don't want mm-hmm. to get to that next level. They're not all going to make it. But, you know, I think prior to us kind of getting into that program, meaning the guys that I have there with me now went right from, you know, the executive on down. Prior to that, there was a real void in our program when you consider the success that we've always had at the minor level for at least for the last 20 years. It's a pretty dominant organization.
Yeah.
Strength in numbers, you know, 1,500 kids play every summer. And then you get to the junior A level, and there wasn't a lot of success. And there especially wasn't a lot of guys, you know, moving up to the highest levels, probably since the kind of the Prout,
yeah,
Gene Ash, that era, those
yeah,
guys.
Yeah.
You know, and so then now we've kind of gotten back to that level again, and we hope to continue to do that.
A couple more minutes here before we let you go. If you were the commissioner of the National Lacrosse League for one day, is there something you would change?
Boy, one thing.
Okay, give me two or three. What are some things you would change about
one,
the game?
I would go to three officials.
Yeah.
Would be one. I just got prompted on one here.
Yeah.
This may sound a little bit out there, but I would get rid of the handshake after games.
Yeah. Okay. I know where that's going. I know where that's coming. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, so don't spoil the fun. But, no more post-game handshakes?
Yeah, I think that's got to go. We've been near misses on many occasions.
Yeah, on many leagues and many teams, yeah.
But, you know, it's just not worth it to say, you know, we just went to battle and now we're going to say, hey, good job.
Yeah, yeah.
Say that later on if you want to, but. But, yeah, I think three officials, I think the game is way, way, way too fast for two guys. guys.
Yeah.
And impossible to call too many men virtually. You know, there's just, I think, and I think there's a move toward it. It's just a matter of money, I believe.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Hopefully we can get to that. But, no, you know, I think, Teddy, I believe our game is the best it's ever been. And it's largely due to the talent that's out there. I think we probably need a couple more teams to, I think there's a lot of really good players that aren't in the league now. And it continues to be that way. More and more kids going to school in the U.S. who are getting that mature development, you know, 4 years of college, plus they've played a bunch of years of junior, a year of senior A, and then, boom, you know, they're probably ready to play in our league, but there's no job. So, but I think they got to be careful of that. I think we've gone the other way where, you know, expanded just to markets just to be there instead of having the right ownership. So those are a couple of things I think I would do.
Okay. So the 1992 Bandits is widely regarded as one of the greatest teams, if not the greatest team of all time. You were the rookie of the year that year. You guys finished the year 8-0. You're on a 22-game winning streak over 2.5 seasons. And you play with Darris Kilgore and Bob Hamley. And, of course, everyone's talking about their run-in this weekend. Now, I have a couple questions for you on this one. As a coach, would you have called that timeout?
Probably not, but I wasn't there, and you never know the circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know what the circumstances were. And I actually didn't see it because I've been traveling a little bit, so I didn't see that specific thing that occurred. I did notice on the game sheet that there was some shenanigans at the end.
And, oh, yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I'll never forget. I can tell you a funny story because this came up the other day because one of the guys I work closely with in Edmonton, he's Bruce's CFO for all his companies. He asked me about it, and I said, you know what? I'll never forget the time when we were standing on the bench in Toronto, and we were getting our butts handed to us by Buffalo.
Yeah,
and there was about a minute to go, and one of our players who is still playing in the league, shall remain unnamed, I won't say who it was, yelled out, "Let's send an effing message." And Les said, "You had 59 minutes to send a message. Sit down." Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So. Like, you know, they should have sent a message a long time ago if you're, that's what you're thinking.
Yeah.
So. But you know, it's tough, though. I mean, I wasn't there, and, you know, you just never know the circumstances.
But as a coach, are you worried about your player's safety in the final minute of a game that's a blowout? And are you thinking, okay, maybe I should put out a couple of my tough guys? Chris Hall did it this weekend in Philadelphia. It was late in the game. He sends out Jeff Molesky and Matt Beers out the front gate just to make sure nothing happens. And next thing you know, there's two fights going on. Are you in a position as a coach to say, hey, I just want to make sure my guys are safe. Okay. I'm going to go send out Kyle Rubish and Chris Corbeil. Go play a shift to O.
Yeah. You do have to be careful. And that's, I think, and that's what I don't like about it.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point in a minute? Why should I have to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I can see why guys would.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been in circumstances where I've done that, and I've been in others where you don't have to.
Yeah.
It depends on who you're playing. Depends on I think the kind of the mood of the game.
Right.
And never mind the last minute. I mean, you know, our game 2 weeks ago against Calgary, the whole last quarter was a gong show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, so, you know, what do you do? Like, you got to play, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't just,
you're not going to sit back.
No, and especially against a team like that.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, you know, they score five on you and, you know,
they're right back in it.
Full game. So,
yeah.
So you got to play, right?
And yeah.
It's unfortunate that that's the way it goes sometimes. But, you know, I don't know. To me, it's a respect thing. And I don't personally do it. I don't like it. As I said, I like that, you know, you had 59 minutes to send a message, quote.
Yeah,
I always
yeah.
go back to that one. And,
yeah.
You know what? That's where you tip your hat and say, you know what? We got beat tonight.
Yeah.
And too bad that it gets to that other stuff.
Yeah. I remember one time playing for the Victoria Shamrocks, we were playing Burnaby and they were just teeing off on all of our guys. So every time we got the ball, we'd waste 15 seconds and Walt Christensen would just say, just give the ball back. And so we would hold the ball for a bit and then just give it back to him. So our old guys couldn't get chopped on and we just let their guys play, their old guys play. And we got fined for playing, you know, not giving the game respect.
Yeah, so I know.
You can't win. You know what I mean?
You can't win.
You can't win.
You're in that circumstance, you cannot win. Because you're right. You can roll the ball down the other floor and just play defense, and then you know what? You're making a mockery of the game.
Exactly.
But at the same time, like you said, why would I send out my star players to get hacked and whacked? And a lot of times it's control of the game by the officials.
Too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally.
So like if you're – I find it happens in our league a little bit.
Yeah.
Like if you're crushing a team, some scoreboard officiating comes in and they just let shit go and call kind of cheesy stuff on you to even it up a little bit. And
yeah.
They're like, you know what, just call the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just game management.
Yeah, and the refs who did that Buffalo game did a great job. The game wasn't out of hand by any means. It was just, I think it was Hamley just making sure that, you know, I don't want my guys to get, I just don't think he needed to call the timeout. He could have just, you know, whistled and said, hey, Ilya, you know, all my young guys get off the floor. We're just going to make sure nothing happens. But I really don't think it needed to be done. Derek, yeah. This was awesome. I always enjoy catching up and chatting with you. You're doing a great job there in Edmonton, week off. And now three big road games for one of the hottest teams in the league, the Edmonton Rush. Good luck this weekend. And make sure you say hi to my good buddy, Ryan Ward, because I know he's one of your leaders in that locker room, and he's having a great year. So say hi to Wardo for me, and good luck this weekend.
All right, thanks for having me on, Teddy. Appreciate it.
There he is, Derek Keenan. I really wanted to ask him about Ryan Ward, because him and I go back to when, you know, we were 4 years old playing in Brayfoot Box. But Ryan having a fantastic year for the Edmonton Rush. The Edmonton Rush as a whole are having a very fantastic year, building off of that championship run last year. So that's 3 weeks in a row of the GM podcast. We're going to take a break next week. I happen to be on a bit of a vacation. I'm not going to Paris like Mark Matthews. I'm just going to the sunshine of Palm Desert, get some golf in. So the podcast will return in 2 weeks' time. We still have two more Western teams to go. We still got to talk to the Colorado Mammoth GM, Steve Govett, and Mr. Arlotta of the Minnesota Swarm before we head to the Eastern Conference. We're closing in at the end of the season, and these podcasts will just keep on going. So thanks for tuning in to Off the Crossbar podcast this week on isleindoor.com. Don't forget, you can see all the podcasts here on the website, or you can go to iTunes and download them, and you can listen to them anywhere in the world that you would like. Enjoy the games this weekend, lacrosse fan, and remember, be excellent to each other.